This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's program, high unemployment creates unconventional job opportunities. As Bette Davis said in All About Eve, fasten your seatbelts, it's going to be a bumpy night. Unemployment rates are approaching 10%, and you can hear the fear in a lot of conversations. But the very nature of change invariably creates new opportunities. Employers who are reluctant to hire full-time employees may be seeking freelancers, consultants, and part-timers to get the work done. They want a date, but not to get married. Creative job seekers are using bridge jobs to get their foot in the door or gain new experience or build a resume. Today, career coach and executive search expert Dr. Beth Ross emphasizes creative approaches to dealing with a topsy-turvy job market. Dr. Ross, I'm delighted to be able to talk with someone who is upbeat and optimistic about how to get a good-paying job in today's market. Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start with the concept of bridge jobs. Can you give me an example of someone you've worked with that did well with a bridge job?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you're using that term because it's one that I've been using for the last year. And when I first started it with clients, they looked at me as if I were daft. And now it's looking a lot more interesting. What I say to them is, in so many cases, a bridge job is simply what a bridge is. It's a conduit from here to there, and the there may not be quite at that point yet. I'm thinking of one client that I have who has taken a job that is very, very different from what he had been doing before. It's in the same industry, but it's in a different segment, and he was very, very concerned about, oh my goodness, if I take this job, I'm not up to speed. What about my learning curve and so on? And he's discovering that the learning curve is quite interesting. He's not up to his former compensation level, but indeed, he's looking hard at perhaps doing some extra training in this bridge job situation and perhaps staying in it longer than he thought. The one thing I'm trying to get across to clients is that nothing is forever. We certainly know that in today's economy, don't we?
Yeah, futurists have been telling us for decades that a bigger and bigger portion of the job market is going to be freelancers and part-timers and consultants. And I think today's job market is just speeding up that process with steroids.
Yeah, it truly is. I have clients now who refer to themselves very happily as permanent part-timers. They're enjoying the fact that they're not on the employee role because it gives them an opportunity to have a lot more freedom in what they're doing than they've had before.
And the upside of that is a lot of people really don't like the jobs that they've been at for 5 or 10 years or something and love variety, and the idea of your job changing every 6 or 12 months or so can be exciting and keep life interesting.
Yeah, it's really very, very, very true. And I think that the situation that we're finding ourselves in as it relates to employment is very, very appealing to people who have an entrepreneurial streak that they really didn't know they had before.
So a typical bridge is going from having expertise, say you're an accountant, but you had always worked in the steel industry, and now you're transferring those accountant skills to maybe a computer firm?
Yeah, a computer firm, or in one case, transferring these skills to a library research situation, which is about as far as you can go. And everyone said, oh, this is not going to work. It's not going to work. And it's working beautifully.
So if someone feels stuck in their current job and they want to see if there are some bridge possibilities, where do you look, or what's the strategy for finding places you might bridge to?
Well, There are a number of ways you can go. The first thing you do, of course, is talk to everybody you know and everybody you've ever known in whatever trade it is you're practicing, and finding out what they're doing. But it's as complicated or as simple as looking at, I think almost every day, AOL has a whole list on their homepage of who's hiring. And the most interesting things come up, like moving van companies on a national basis. And I'm trying to think, hospital chains that are hiring various people to do things for them. And they don't care whether you've had a specific medical or hospital experience in the past. It's really quite amazing. If you're creative about this.
Well, why are hospitals hiring?
Why? Because their infrastructure has to continue no matter what.
So one strategy would be to look at what the hot sectors are. I guess another would be to really look at what you love.
Yeah, that is very true, too. It's that whole adage that we've been talking about for so many years, do what you love and the money will follow. That's pretty difficult to work on for today.
The money will follow only usually only works in the movies.
Yeah.
But the idea that if you've got a hobby that you really know well, that gives you a real head start on that field.
It does.
For example, our account, if his hobby is guns, he might be able to transfer into gun stores and already know what the inventory's about.
Oh, he would definitely know what the inventory's about. It would work.
What else do you do to brainstorm ideas for bridge jobs?
I think keep up to speed on career trends and issues in your area of expertise is so important. I've been talking about lifetime learning, and I'm sure you have too, for years and years and years. And some people listen and some people don't. It's more important than ever to try to figure out what's the cutting edge of tomorrow. What is that thing that is thriving while everything else is down? And it can vary from one part of the country to the next.
I even read that alcohol sales are way up and more people are staying home and watching TV. It's amazing the things that pop up in hard times.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. The Depression was notorious for prohibition after all, right?
Mm-hmm. And people still went to the movies during the Depression.
There was an article just recently in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal about this business that the movie industry is not being hit at all. I was in the huge discount vitamin store here in New York and waiting for a prescription to be filled. And I said to the pharmacist, are you all being really hit by the economic situation we're in right now? He looked at me and smiled. He says, no, he says, I think people are buying more supplements than they ever have.
And probably more antidepressants and a lot of other meds.
Yeah, possibly.
So for someone who hasn't thought of themselves as an entrepreneur, is willing to give it a try, how do you make the mind shift to being more entrepreneurial in the job market?
With great difficulty, I would say. One of the hardest things about being an entrepreneur, as you probably know yourself, is the mercurial nature of how your compensation remuneration comes in. Sometimes you're doing very, very, very well, and there's lots and lots and lots of business going on, and then there are the down times and the wait times. It involves a lot of handling your money exceedingly well, and for some people, this is really hard right now because in the past they haven't had this as a life habit.
So you have to be very secure in yourself. You have to be willing to take risks, and you have to be good at dealing with money.
Yeah, you do. And I think sometimes it's really well if you can sort of join in with someone else on this endeavor, because it's not that misery loves company, but it's that certainly that one brain is great, two is better, three might even be better. And I think I'm talking about perhaps the starting of new businesses. I recently also talked to someone who had been laid off, had nothing to do, and took a janitorial type job. and realized pretty quickly with his business sense and acumen that janitorial service wasn't being run very well.
Mm-hmm.
He thought to himself, okay, why can't I sign up people to do this too and farm them out? And before he knew it, he was sending out flyers and getting contracts for business, and now it's thumping along with some bumps, but it still is a viable business. It's moving ahead.
That's a great example that anytime you go into a different field, you start seeing all the ways things could be done better, which either you could bump your way up into a supervisory or administrative position, or you could go the whole entrepreneurial route and start your own business.
Start one yourself. Yeah, they're not going to let you bump up the ladder because the ladder is already full. So, yeah, this is a very interesting thing. Service will always be in demand. It is. There need to be cars and limos to take people to the airport no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are ending up as drivers who never thought they would. I have a lot of clients who are busier now with their trade associations, and these organizations have lots of speeches, lots of working on how to manage your career type seminars and so on, and people are attending these things in droves, whereas perhaps a year ago it was not so prevalent. And then you've got the people in financial services who are definitely trying to figure out how to transition into something else. How are they going to take these skills they have now and figure out where they might plug them in somewhere else?
So you said if you're going to be an entrepreneur, it's good to have some other people to talk to, and trade groups can be one really good source for that.
Yeah.
Are there other support groups or groups that share skills that you especially recommend?
Yes, I think that is very, very, very true. I heard on NPR recently a piece on the whole business of franchises, and you'd think, gosh, who's got money to buy a franchise? Well, they're doing all kinds of creative financing. And I think, as I remember, I wish I had taken notes on this, but the franchise at the top of the list where people are helped the most at getting started, and then as they move ahead, they get a lot of support too, is Dunkin' Donuts. Which I thought they were going to say some kind of educational thing or something. Nope. Dunkin' Donuts. People are going to eat and drink coffee.
Wow. So when you're working with someone who wants to be an entrepreneur, are there particular organizations you recommend in addition to the trade organizations?
No, because I don't remember anyone ever coming to me and looking at me and saying, I want to be an entrepreneur. When they come to me, they've either been laid off, or I've got a whole cadre of people right now who have jobs who want to do a transition in this time, because they're smart enough to know it's going to be easier now than it's going to be when things get better. But no, I've never heard of anyone who says, I want to be an entrepreneur. Either they are or they aren't. So I don't know what kind of group. I'm trying to think. Maybe you have some ideas about what kind of group would support entrepreneurship. There's probably an association of entrepreneurs, and I've never checked it out.
I'm sure there are a number. One that comes to my mind are Dan Kennedy's Inner Circle groups, which are very entrepreneurial marketing type groups. And I'm sure there are many others, including one specifically for people over 50.
Oh, yes, certainly that has been around for a while. Before we sort of sank into the economic abyss here that we're in, there is an organization for people who have been retired by their companies, and they work together as an entrepreneurial group to pool their skills so that corporations and industry can go to them and say, hey, we need someone who is a super expert on mergers and acquisitions, for instance. Who do you have? And then that person will be contacted, and perhaps a consulting engagement will come from that. Oh, my God. Well, you know, we just don't have help organizations right now for this crisis time that we're in, unfortunately. Don't know if endless support groups are going to solve what's going on right now, but I do think that contact with other people will really help a lot, don't you?
I have a bias that I want groups that are going to teach skills as well as provide some emotional support.
And yeah, the emotional support, yeah. And
not just the hand-holding.
Now, this is one of the things that I'm doing. I'm talking to trade associations right now and offering my services free to speak to their membership.
Let me go back to bridge jobs. If you're doing a bridge career move, any suggestions for anything different that needs to be done on the resume?
Yes and no. Bridge jobs come about in strange ways. Sometimes in an interview where it's very obvious that the company has nothing for the individual right now. But over here in this other segment of our industry, we do need some accounting help. And Joe Blow says, but I don't have that kind of accounting background. And the interviewer says, how fast a learner are you? And of course, Joe, having had interview training from me, knows to say, I learn anything as fast as I can. And bridge jobs can come across that way without any change in the resume at all. Sometimes, if you're targeting something that is enough different from what you've been doing before, we have to craft a professional resume presentation that says, oh, this is what else I can do. I don't think I would spend a lot of time thinking about, whoops, I'm going to get a bridge job through a resume. You're going to get a bridge job through a personal contact. You're going to get a bridge job through an interview. You're going to get a bridge job through approaching someone that you know has a specific need, and you more or less have a background that will fit in.
And maybe the cover letter can do the job, and you don't have to change the resume at all.
Yeah, I would say that's a very good thought, that the cover letter can lean on that to do the work that you need.
So if you're an employer and somebody is pitching a bridge type employment to you, what kind of objections do employers usually have?
They would naturally have the objection that you don't have the background and experience. Bridge jobs come about more often. First of all, bridge jobs almost never pay what you were getting before. And they come about because you yourself suggest, since you don't have X, I think I can do Y. And then it's up to the employer to say, well, you don't have the background and experience. Then you say you're a fast learner. Then you give three examples of courses you could go and take immediately. And then you do all kinds of negotiation. For instance, give me the opportunity to try this for 90 days and we'll see how it turns out. Or let me do this as a part-time consultant first before you take me on as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have to negotiate it yourself.
Okay, so
not argue with a potential employer.
So you want to give some concrete examples of how fast a learner you are.
You do want to give examples of, well, in such and such and such a position, I didn't know a thing about X, and I had to get really busy so that I became the Y expert. And here's how I did it. Self-esteem and self-confidence, really, really important, and this is one of the things that working with a career coach will do for people. It really, really, really does help. I got a call just this afternoon from a young lady, mother, and she's been out of work for 6 months, and the only word she's hearing is no. What she needs at this point is one little teeny tiny yes to move her ahead. It may not be, yes, you can have this big job at this magazine back, but it might be, yes, you can help us work as an editorial assistant. Suddenly you got the possibility for a bridge job. You never label anything a bridge job. Don't let them know that that's what you're thinking. It sounds like a lack of commitment.
Okay, and I would think one of their objections is, well, maybe this person is just doing this as a filler job, and 3 months from now, when they get the job they really want, they're out of here. So part of what you want to pitch is, I've really always wanted to learn these skills, and it's worth my while to earn less money than I used to in order to get new skills. I don't even have to go to, I don't have to pay college tuition. I'm learning it on the job. And consequently, I'm willing to accept the lower salary. And then you negotiate a salary that makes it worth his while, as well as getting your foot in the door.
Yeah, that's very, very, very true. Well, everybody still knows that as soon as things change, you're going to have the option to move on to something better. Hopefully by that time, you will have proved yourself. You will have shown your work ethic. You will have absolutely developed a great deal of enthusiasm about what you're doing. Again, nothing is forever.
And you want to have a belief going into it that anytime you cross-pollinate, you just bring such fresh eyes and fresh ideas that you become invaluable.
You do. You don't come in with any preconceived notions, which is wonderful. And sometimes employers just, they tell me they just love this, that they don't have to fight somebody who's decided, well, this and this and this and this and this is what I believe and this is what I'm going to do.
We're talking with Dr. Beth Ross, who does career coaching, executive coaching, coaching on the nitty-gritty issues like interviewing and resume writing and salary negotiation. And in her spare time, she also does professional speaking. She's based in New York City and also does a lot of work in San Francisco, Silicon Valley. Her website is BethRoss.com, BethRoss.com. Anything else you want to say about what kind of work you've been doing?
Very interesting time. I think we're all doing different kinds of work from what we've done before. I'm doing a lot more work with corporate settings who are being displaced. That is very, very interesting because the companies are paying for this outplacement work so that people get a very good resume to move forward, a good cover letter, interview training, salary negotiation skills, and sort of base the whole thing about, wow, this is a new, this is an ending, all right, but hopefully it's a great new beginning. And the corporate work is a little bit different from the individual coaching that I've done so much of in the past, but it's very, very interesting and I think very helpful to people and may indeed be a huge part of our future in the world of work.
Why do you think the employers are paying for that besides maybe some guilt?
Guilt, sure. Guilt and protecting themselves legally, depending on what the scenario looks like. In one recent case, client work that I did, they were relocating an office, a North American office, from New York to Los Angeles. And essentially, when you do something like that, you're firing people en masse because a lot of people can't go from the East Coast to the West Coast or vice versa, simply because of family, because of children, because of spouses' work, and so forth. And sometimes they do it just because they really care. Occasionally there are legal issues and that certain people are being laid off and are they the oldest people or are they of a certain gender or a certain ethnic background and so on. There are lots of different reasons because in some cases they do nothing. They just say, hey, you're out of here.
So the biggest legal risk is discrimination claims.
Yep.
Well, shift gears a little. What's in a name? What's the difference if you call yourself a consultant, a freelancer, permanent part-time person? For a lot of people, consultant means I couldn't hack it in the real world anymore, and I'm hoping someone will hire me now and then.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. It depends on what you decide to call yourself. You know, some industries use the word freelancer. Some people feel better with consultant. I don't think there's any difference in what those words are. Permanent part-timer very definitely says, I don't want to be an employee.
I like the phrase because there's such a confidence about it that I know who I am, I know what I want, and I know what I do well.
And you've got nerve enough to try to, not try, but actually pull it off. Look, there have been people for years who have been doing this, though. I've had clients who wanted to be ski instructors in the winter, and so that means they can't take a permanent job because for X number of months, they want to be on the slope doing that kind of work, no matter what it pays, high or low.
Of course, you could even think of school teachers as being permanent part-timers, and that many of them it's just 9 months.
You could indeed. You could indeed. Any of us who've taught school know darn good and well that we would get part-time jobs at Christmas and during the summer. Back when I taught school, you had to do that to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
A different time.
One of the advantages for older workers is that oftentimes you don't need the health insurance and some of the other perks that people often think of. And so you can afford to be a consultant, where maybe somebody in their 30s, it's much tougher if they're having to pay their own insurance and other kinds of expenses. So I assume that's something that you can pitch when you're approaching employers?
Oh, I would strongly suggest you don't pitch that, for goodness sake.
Okay.
Because it's saying quite clearly, aha, I know you don't want to pay me benefits, so I'll work part-time. Uh-uh, stay out of that one.
Well, I was thinking more of the smaller businesses for employers, which is a huge, huge part of the market.
Yeah, it
who
is.
Who are maybe a dozen employees or maybe even 100 employees. All that personnel stuff is just such a headache for them. And
it is. And most of them are just eradicating it, period. You want a job, here's a job. We don't do benefits.
For older workers, you have a lot of opportunity because you don't have to have those benefits that younger workers may be reluctant to take
really
on those kind of jobs.
Yeah,
because
it's true. Yeah, I need, because they may have young families and so on. I've had two corporate assignments in recent times when a whole group of very young people, 30 years old and under, were being laid off. And very interesting to watch this age group, because they're much more interested in how big the severance package will be than they are in whether or not their benefits will continue. In most cases, the benefits only continue a month or two, depending on how long they've been there, and then they have to go on COBRA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very expensive, and that only lasts for a certain period of time, and then there's nothing. I think we're talking about this in Washington right now, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it came out.
It's going to be very, very, very interesting. And these older people who ostensibly have some benefits left over from their corporate life and or have Medicare, which is substandard health care at best, would maybe argue that they might need benefits too, but they can't get them. So a lot of the older workers are going back to work as consultants and as part-timers, and the corporations are very glad to have them because they don't have to pay them benefits.
I'm kind of bold about a lot of things. What do you think about trying to be very creative and say, hey, I'm an accountant, coming up with different kind of labels, different ways of thinking of things, and presenting yourself that way?
I'm a rent an accountant.
Or I'm a concierge accountant.
Oh, yeah. You know something, there's a company, and I have it on my desk, and they refer to themselves, they're the corporation's concierge. They get dinner reservations, they get airline tickets, they do all this stuff, and there are companies whose titles are, in fact, one I know is Rent a CFO.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go Rent a CFO, and people sign up there, and they charge whatever their company's going to charge, and then they uptick that, and then the corporations pay for it. I've been in several corporate situations lately where that's who they have in there running their finances. I would question how well that really works sometimes, because there's no company loyalty or anything else. It's like being a French foreign legionnaire. You're a hired gun.
I interviewed someone just a few weeks ago who that is his business, is subcontracting all the personnel services for companies, and he makes the case that he's able to do a much better job because for him it's a full-time job with his staff, whereas it's hard for a small company to have one or two people in the HR department that know everything.
Mm-hmm.
There are just so many tax forms and policies and everything.
Just doing the forms for medical claims. 10 years ago in California, they had these companies. what they were called, not PPOs, I forget what they were called, but they did this. They did all your HR stuff for you. It eliminates the personal touch. There is no one you can really talk to who cares whether you live or die, but they get the forms filled out, and companies were, at that time, I know, paying for it. I suppose they still do.
And I even see firms that will handle your personal insurance claims, because you have to manage the copays and everything. And if you've been in a hospital,
yep,
you have all those EOBs come in. And
I know, it's terrible.
It's just a nightmare of accounting. And the idea of paying somebody $50 a month or something to manage it is very appealing. Just looking around at where are the needs, where are the gaps, what are people frustrated with, you know, is showing us where there's a lot of opportunities. And you don't have to rent a building or something. You can do it out of your home.
Yeah.
Do it on location, and very little overhead.
Yep.
When it comes to when do you need a career coach, I was thinking about this a little, and I was thinking the rule of thumb is the more you're reinventing yourself, the more you especially need one, the more you're creating a new pathway, like the bridge jobs that we were talking about, or in some cases, if you need a Rolodex of people who know where the particular jobs are.
Well, you wouldn't get that from a career coach. Career coaches don't tell you where to go. They give you the methodology to figure it out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that one of the times when you need a career coach, most definitely in today's world especially, is if you're going through interviewing, any kind of interviewing, internal or for a new job or whatever you're interviewing for. That's where people fall down. If you miss the mark on the first interview, you don't get a second chance. And the first interview is almost never a decision maker unless it's a really, really small company. You need to be such an ace at interviewing that you can maximize any interview situation you get in. And that's one of the biggest pluses for engaging the services of a career coach.
It almost reminds me of actors. It's so hard to get an audition that when
uh-huh.
you do, you have to be really good.
Yeah, you have to be really good. If you miss the first track, you're toast.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also the time factor that even if you can put the pieces together yourself, if it takes you longer, that's that much longer that you don't
yeah.
have income coming in.
You make a lot of mistakes along the way. Part of what a career coach does is teach you the job search methodology that's going to work, proven work. And I have clients, you know, that I know are doing it right now, and they're getting interviews, they're getting jobs. It's not a hopeless time. It just feels like it in a lot of ways.
We'll get back to Dr. Ross in just a moment. Note how old you feel now. You will soon feel a lot younger after hearing Dr. Bricky. That's how I'm usually introduced when I give a keynote address. We are brainwashed with limiting beliefs about aging. As America's preeminent anti-aging psychologist, I bring good news for a change. A change in how you view aging, and I do it with a good helping of humor. In short, I help audiences learn the mental game for living longer, healthier, and happier. But I'm not satisfied with people just acquiring information and having a feel-good time. I have people adopt healthier beliefs on the spot and lock them in for lifelong benefits. I also like to stay and do breakout sessions, consulting, and individual coaching at no additional cost. When your organization or business needs a speaker, have them check out my demo video at anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. And give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. And now back to Dr. Ross. Well, we talked about bridge jobs. We talked about consultants and freelancers. Are there other creative approaches to finding jobs these days?
Oh, there must be. One approach is you can't lose touch with anybody you've ever known, personally or professionally. Information is power. Someone will suggest, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And guaranteed it's going to be something that you haven't. While you're doing the other methodology stuff, you've got to keep up a very sophisticated network of people.
So this is a combination of being a brilliant networker and also being a Columbo of, couldn't help but wondering how this gets done and who does that and who does the hiring. And
it's hard work. It's hard work and it's very, very, very competitive. And it sure helps if you know somebody. Oh, my gosh. Think of who you know, where they are, what influence they might have. Don't be afraid to say, I need your help. I need your advice. Never say, I need a job. Just don't say it. They know you do.
Mm-hmm. So if you call somebody up that you haven't talked to in 5 years, are there particularly good ways to approach them besides not saying, I need a job?
You say, hello, Joe. I haven't talked to you in 5 years, and I'm desperate. I'm calling everybody I know. What's happening to you?
So you could approach it as, I'm researching different fields and need to get some people who know this field. People want to help, and if you're presenting them as an expert in something, it's very boosts their ego and makes them more...
Oh, sure. People love to help. They love to give advice. But you must not be afraid to say, I need your help. I need your advice. I am not calling because I think you can get me a job. Make that very clear. That will turn people off faster than anything.
Okay. Anything else you want to do besides tapping your network?
Good grief. That is a profound question. I'm thinking, don't watch the television. That it'll depress you so much you won't know what's hitting you. But on the other hand, you have to keep abreast of what's happening, and particularly what's happening in changing fields. You asked me a while ago, why would hospitals be hiring? Well, think about it. Why wouldn't they not be hiring all the time? Try looking at the website for any major hospital in, say, New York City where I live, and you're going to see endless, endless job postings. How many people are appropriate for those postings, we don't know. And are they hiring temps who get all the resumes who come in and 60% of them end up in the trash can? We don't know.
Hmm.
It sure helps to know someone.
It does indeed. Any closing thoughts?
Oh, it's going to get better. I'm sorry. I'm laughing, and this is not a funny time. Look, the job market right now is competitive. Everything has changed. The world of work is not the same as it used to be. Look, we've been hearing for years and years and years that entrepreneurship and people going out on their own and inventing new businesses and inventing new ways to make a living, and everything is different. So it is a different time, and you've got to think in a different way, and you've got to be ready to change the way you think very, very, very swiftly. But what I would say in closing is that people are still getting jobs, and they're getting good jobs. And, of course, my business is career coaching, and so I'm definitely pitching work with a coach. It could be the best money you ever invested.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe in yourself, the career coach will help you with that, too.
Hopefully. Hopefully. It's like I said a little when I was talking about the young lady a few minutes ago when I said all she needs is one small yes in some way. Yes, you can have this interview. Yes, you can come back for a second interview, which means she passed the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing people absolutely collapse on those first interviews.
We're talking with executive career coach Dr. Beth Ross. She's based in New York City and also does a lot of work in San Francisco's Silicon Valley. The website is BethRoss.com, BethRoss.com. Beth, you want to say a little about what kind of resources are on your website?
Oh, well, there's a lot of material written about, I mean, all the things we've talked about. Everything from targeting to assessment to interview training, salary negotiation, and so forth. Also, under media presentations, there's some great recordings. There's one of an interview I did with you, which is just wonderful. And so you can hear me talk about a lot of different things. I was thinking just the other day, there's so much on my website that was on there several years back and is still there. And I'm here right now talking about how everything is changing. Oh, one of the ways you can read about things that are they're changing. Over on the left, when you see media presentations, I have a blog, and I do articles for that blog, and you can make comments there. But I try to write about things that are very current right now.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that information, I think, might be really thought-provoking for anybody who goes to the website. And on the website, you'll find my 800 telephone number and my email and so forth, so you can get in touch with me.
Beth, it's a great pleasure working with a pro and working with an optimist. Thank you for sharing your insights and sharing your
optimism.
Thank
you for your wonderful questions. You're one of the best interviewers around, and the questions that you ask really make me think, too. And I don't know all the answers. I think right now we all know all the questions and we're sort of groping for answers. But if we go in a positive way, we'll get there.
Okay, great. Commentary. In his latest book, Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell, the author of Blink and Tipping Point, analyzes what determines what people have extraordinarily successful careers. While IQ helps, after about an IQ of 130, it doesn't matter much. One factor is what he calls the 10,000-hour rule, that it takes about 10,000 hours of study, at least in a cognitively complex field, in order to master it. That may sound intimidating, but it's only 40 hours a week for 5 years, not much longer than it takes to get a college degree. With longer and longer lifespans and better health at older ages, it becomes quite feasible for people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s to learn a new profession and perform it at a mastery level for many years. Of course, some jobs require college degrees or certifications, but some primarily require experience, hence the concept of a bridge job for changing careers, either to escape burnout and seek more interesting work, or because one's niche is becoming as obsolete as VCRs and 8-track tapes. Gladwell points out another factor, being in the right place at the right time. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs got into the ground floor of computer programming. Few of us are going to be that successful or famous, but the same principle applies, and fortunately with a shorter time frame. When Beth talked about researching what jobs are hot, she was talking about that opportunity timing. Let me give a concrete example. There are more nursing homes in this country than there are McDonald's restaurants, and each one has to have an administrator. What does it take to be a nursing home administrator? Well, you need business management skills, HR skills, and some knowledge of gerontology and healthcare. What kind of credentialing requirements are there? While it varies from state to state, typically you need a college degree, and you have to have taken 5 courses: nursing home administration, healthcare financial management, legal issues in healthcare, gerontology, and personnel management. You probably also need to do some kind of a supervised internship. You could get a bridge job in a nursing home, such as admissions coordinator, and take the coursework part-time in the evening and work your way into a nursing home administrator job. Or you could go to school full-time for a semester or two and seek the job directly. The average salary is $90,000. While we hope the Eden Alternative and Greenhouse Revolution movements change nursing homes into more home-like facilities that people want to live in, whether that happens or not, with 1.6 million nursing home residents and almost 1 million assisted living facility residents in the U.S., there are lots of jobs for nursing home administrators. And with the population aging, there's going to be an expansion of demand. Beth talked about the importance of talking with everyone. So in our example, people considering a career change to a nursing home administrator would want to talk with everybody they know who knows anything about nursing homes, even if they've just visited a relative in a nursing home. They should visit nursing homes, learn about the field, and then decide if it's a good career move. Now, I'm not pushing that job, but I did want to use a concrete example. As for career coaching, I'd restate my rule of thumb that while it's always helpful to have a career coach, it's especially critical when you're reinventing a career, taking a creative or uncharted course in your career, for honing your resume and interview skills, or when it's critical to get a job as soon as possible. Baby steps! Always like to leave you with a little baby step to take to advance you on that path to living longer and healthier and happier. Our baby step this time is simply to keep up on job trends. You can do that as simply as Googling in a search term like job trends. You can go to BLS.gov, that's Bureau of Labor and Statistics, BLS.gov, and click on Occupational Outlook Handbook, which will give you detailed job descriptions for hundreds of jobs, as well as an idea of what they pay and the outlook for the future. You might also look on that Occupational Outlook Handbook section on jobs and projections. And by the way, that Occupational Outlook Handbook is in every library reference section. Emails! Love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Comment Center interview last week with sexologist Dr. Robert Birch talked about how refreshing it is and what a relief it is to not feel the performance pressure, but just have fun and play. Some listeners reminded me of the inner game of tennis and how this is a lot like sports in that if you try too hard, your conscious mind takes over and the results are not as good. Whereas the more you just enjoy playing sports and you're, quote, loose, the more likely you are to play well, to respond well to the nuances and the subtleties, and to not only have a good time, but if you'll forgive the term, perform your best as well. If you're interested in staying as young as possible, you'll want to pop my anti-aging hypnosis CDs into your CD player when you're ready to go to sleep. Not only will it help you get to sleep and help with that insomnia, it will also let you effortlessly absorb suggestions that help you live longer, healthier, and happier. I'm really proud of these anti-aging hypnosis CDs, and I love the way that John David Jones, who has worked with many famous stars and professional speakers, created original four-track keyboard music for me that just hugs my words and enhances the message. To get your copy of the anti-aging hypnosis CDs, just go to drbrickey.com, drbrickey.com. And while you're there, also sign up for my free email newsletter, the Defy Aging newsletter. And you might want to pick up a copy of my Oprah featured book, Defy Aging, and a copy of 52 Baby Steps to Grow Young. The next two shows are going to be on straight talk advice from a cardiologist and a cardiac psychologist on how to deal with heart disease and on how to get out of a hospital alive. That is, how to avoid all those medication errors, staph infections, MRSA, and all the other bad things that too often happen in hospital stays. So if you have questions on either of those topics or comments on those topics or on today's program, send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Until next week, this is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.